Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Almi. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almi.
Welcome to our show today. We are so happy that you can be with us. And please do tell your friends about our show if you like it. It would mean a great deal to me if we could build this up and have a wider listener base. It's always very gratifying when one puts many hours in that it is well received and people are benefiting from it. So we have with us today Rogier. And so I'm up for some wonderful questions today. What are they going to be?
Well, I don't know if the subject matter is necessarily always wonderful, but at the very least, I'd like to perpetuate our sort of tradition of putting information on YouTube and on iTunes and then on the radio, and it all kind of ties in together. And in this case, concerning the videos we've made about the alien agenda and Nibiru and the Anunnaki, which was kind of spurred by this week in which we got suddenly all these emails which were relating to Nibiru. So I thought you could probably expand on the topic here, although you may want to disclaim it as well with your usual point about the fact that it's technically kind of fiction because all these beings are just no more.
Well, firstly, Rogier, I like what you're doing with that because for our listeners, Rogier is the producer of our video sections, and they're on YouTube and iTunes, as you've heard. But what is nice is when, for instance, we have clips on these subjects on those places. We also this week wrote detailed answers regarding this because, as he pointed out, we got a just a whole slew of questions on Nibiru for some reason. And so we in detail answered it also in our email group. So make sure that you sign up for our email list, which is, of course, free, and you can do it yourself through just going onto our website at www.spiritualjourneys.com. And so if you go on there and sign up, you will have the benefit of four perspectives on the same topic. YouTube, iTunes, our written email responses back to you, as well as these radio shows that we have in which we can really explore the details. So, all right, let's take a look at Nibiru. Is that where you wanted to start then, Rogier?
Yes, in the sense that, because I know you've been, like, say, for example, a few months ago, I kind of suggested we may sort of spend some time on that, talk about it, but you were, I think, slightly reluctant then. But I think what we could talk about is that there still seems to be this kind of perception doing the rounds that Nibiru and Anunnaki is somehow a good thing in one way or another, but certainly Nibiru and channelings of it and whatever. So I thought you could probably delve into that a little bit and set the record straight.
The Nibiruan influence on the history of man is the only real thing that is of interest. And even that, Mother has designated as allegorical fiction, because many of these old history cycles occurred in television screens from which we have emerged, and the televisions were switched off, so they are no longer there. So when one talks about something that is no longer there, you know, you don't want to pull back those old realities. And so anything that is erased, if we discuss it and if we focus on it and if people out there believe it's still existing, because, you know, some people out there make their living on this as a niche, so that, The point of the matter is that it is regarded as fiction. So please understand that the events that happened between Nibiru and the Earth are at this point erased out of our past. Even some of the civilizations in the past that they established are currently erased, so that it's as though they have never been. But they did in some way help shape the present, and there have been, you know, the positive parts of it have stayed, whatever they may be. Example of one of those positive parts is that Isis came back to Earth into that family. She was not born into that family as is generally assumed, and in fact, the Sumerian records call her the granddaughter, but she is said to be the daughter of Enlil by the history keepers of the cosmos, as I wrote in The Gift of the Unicorns, when I took down the history of the cycles. So Isis, who is also called Inanna, in actual fact, in the Anunnaki language, her name is Ishanna, and Ishanna means come from heaven. And Isis is the name that she was given by the people from Akkad, and Akkad were the low marshlands of Sumeria. Ak means wet, and ad is place, Akkad. So the point is that the benefit that Isis brought to Earth is huge. She wasn't born here, nor did she die here. She came and changed the memory of the family, which was an Anunnaki family, into which she entered, and she came for a very specific purpose, and that is to bring back the memory of the Divine Holy Mother as the first being that created the Father. And she came back also because she wanted to establish the libraries of Isis. The libraries of Isis is a most monumental event that has opened during this last year. The book that I've translated one set of plates in is called Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. The point of that is, though, there were thousands and thousands and thousands such sets of plates in this massive hall that is the Isis libraries. I can be translating them. If somebody just plonked me down in the corner and made sure that they could feed me, I could translate them for the rest of my life. And that's a very long time. So, my brothers and sisters, the point is that the Anunnaki served a purpose in that instance. They didn't only shape humanity. There is a tendency to think that they're the only ones that created humanity or helped you shape humanity the way they are. Multiple races have been coming and going off the face of the earth. And the earth's history goes back far further than when the Anunnaki arrived. And the history of man goes back to the very beginning of creation. They are said to be the first race, and they are called by the Andromedans the Pa-Tal, the noble ones. So humanity did not depend on the Anunnaki for their existence. When the Anunnaki came here, the first one that came here was Alalu, I believe his name was, a deposed king of Nibiru. And when he came here, he found that the earth was, as far as he could see, empty. Basically told them, oh, come here, there's gold here, you know, please do a settlement here, and they ended up doing that. But it wasn't that man did not exist. Man did. They just existed in the hollow earth. Because they arrived, I would say, between 10 and 20,000 years after a massive cataclysm happened. And that cataclysm wiped clear the face of the earth, and it had just started to regrow itself, to repair itself. But the humans that survived that were in the hollow earth. And that's another topic, you know, that we could certainly address sometime. So the Anunnaki, as they came, found nothing here, and then they found later a indigenous being living in the forest, particularly in Africa. and they took them and genetically created a race that ended up being the smaller humans of today. That might be so, but the point of the matter is there were already humans. The human grid already existed. They just genetically made some contributions. What they made, Mother has erased. They gave us the two points in the temples that is responsible for clairaudience, which is not native to man. Mother has cleared the grid of Anunnaki influence, that is the human grid, and she has removed from man that which is part of the hybrid race. And she did this because she said that humankind was too important an archetype for its... She did this because humankind was too important an archetype. If it, humans are to represent the macrocosm as the microcosm, they cannot be tampered with. When they do, it affects the whole. And so the Anunnaki influence, even on man, has been erased. Nibiru as a planet has been erased. And that is about it so far, other than if you want me to go into the characters of the play around Nibiru.
Yes, please. But first, I would just to make clear, because I was meaning to ask about those temples. So that's been erased from the human grid, right?
From the human body.
From the human body. But weren't these temples supposed to be like a contribution?
Well, they were, except they were creating a discordant tone. It's a little bit like having, a symphony in one key, and suddenly you start putting a little bridge piece in there in an entirely different key that doesn't even go with that, you see. It's just discordant. So there was a discordance created, and the discordant tone of those points in the temple pulled us out of the moment and corrupted humankind's innocence, the way noise would interfere with your life. And so they were removed, but their functions were kept and added to the third eye. So it wasn't really as though we lost something. Yes.
Right. Okay, so, and then what was more about the stage play then?
Well, the stage play is this. When Thoth saw Inanna, or Isis, come into this life to try and make a beneficial difference, she came in to try and get the descension swung around into an ascension. When he saw that, he did the same. He came into the family of Enki. And Enki for him was a puppet. He manipulated Enki so much. I mean, Enki might never have participated in many of the very bad, ill deeds that he did had it not been that he was always there to do whatever it was that Thoth wanted. His older brother, Ra, or Marduk, is said to be the villain. The only reason is that Marduk was openly aggressive. He did his acts and revolutions and so on openly. Thoth pretended to be good when he wasn't. And he has went all over the earth giving teachings, establishing himself as the spiritual guru for humankind. Meantime, his agenda was to take over the planet. And he went across the cosmos gathering weapons according to the Darklings, that race which Mother designated as the history keepers of the planet. And not only the planet, actually, but the cosmos. And he gathered weapons of war so he could basically hold the earth hostage and wrest it away, get it away from the dark gods and goddesses that at that time were also trying to rule the earth, whereas Mother was claiming it for her own, but she wasn't always here. And so some of those weapons... There was an accident, for example, with those weapons that Thoth had gathered that caused destruction on Atlantis. One of his other weapons was detonated by the dark gods and goddesses to foil his plans. And so there was a second sinking of Atlantis. We've had several sinkings of Atlantis, as I explain in the book, Secrets of the Hidden Realms. But he was under no circumstances. It turns out, and I feel, you know, not too happy to have to say this, because Thoth for many years was my friend, I thought. He lived here in this house for a couple of months. But Thoth was one of the arch villains of the cosmos. He just separated a good piece out on Earth, while the other piece did the scheming behind the scenes. And so he fooled light workers into believing that he was good. He wrote books like the Emerald Tablets, preaching love and forgiveness and all the rest of it. But he wasn't. His agenda was totally self-serving, and he plundered the Earth when he could. So let's take a break. Is it break time already? I think it is. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Sorry, Ruchir. Just hold that thought.
No problem.
Albion continues the exploration begun in our previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From his background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
So, where would you like to go from here? Did you want to do more on Nibiru, or shall we change topics?
Well, I think I want to stay slightly on the topic at least, because just to certainly clear something up, namely that you were talking about those, conflicts with the dark gods and goddesses, but that may somehow imply that he wasn't one of those dark ones, but obviously he was.
You know, Ruchir, there's no honor amongst thieves. They collaborated only when it suited their purposes. There was a great conspiracy that I won't reveal you if you don't reveal me. So they lied for one another. I lived through something that I've really hardly spoken about in August of 2006. I woke up getting ready to go to class and looked at the clock. It was 10 past the hour. And suddenly I felt myself being pulled backwards through a loop. I went through a loop through what it felt like to me of thousands and thousands and thousands of years, if not more. I emerged from that having seen the most horrific things that were done by the ruler of Nibiru, Anu, by Thoth, by Enki, and so on. The most horrific things by these dark gods, what they did to one another. I saw what they had done right in my home without my knowing it, and what they'd done to me. And, I mean, I lived through hell. Came out the other side, and 1 minute had passed. And Mother said to me, "Now go back in." I repeated this. It felt as though I had lived hundreds of thousands of years. The trauma of seeing the things that I saw was so anguishing that it cracked the luminous egg around my body. The bodies that are stacked like Russian dolls. If the cracks go too far, it's death. They didn't go all the way through, but it actually cracked my luminous body from the total despair. It was horrific. There was not one of them that that didn't behave in the most atrocious way to the other if he could. It's just how much they could get away with. And then when it came to mother, they stood absolutely united in, oh no, we're also innocent.
Okay, so, but in the end, you could say then that, like, for example, Osiris and Thoth were really at war with each other as well, rather than being kind of on the same team or something.
Well, Osiris, absolutely, and you know, there's more to it than this, but for the moment, let this suffice. Osiris was trusted by Isis, by Inanna, and she asked him to be the guardian of another set of very, very sacred libraries, even more ancient than the Isis libraries, which is in Africa, in Zimbabwe, and it's near the Victoria Falls area, and the White Horse Libraries that's there had magical objects in it, and one of the magical objects was a way to travel through time forwards and backwards beyond the massive cycles that are beyond the cycles of life that are just the descension, ascension cycles. They're a little bigger scope than I can explain right now, but it allowed them to track every single move light workers would make, mother would make to ascend the planet, and they had eons of time to find ways in which to counteract that. And he opened that library after swearing to Isis that he wouldn't, to his whole family. And they entered into the White Horse Libraries. Recently, the White Horse Libraries were opened again by mother, and the entire library had to be purged. What they had done is left their patterns there, so that when there was enough energy, they would themselves be reawakened, because they could see that at some point, mother would wipe them out. She cleansed everything. So, you know, that's how he betrayed Inanna, and that, of course, is not known.
No. Okay, well, I think we've probably done enough of Nibiru now, or the Anunnaki at least. do we have time now to go?
Absolutely.
Because one thing I was wondering about, but I just am not sure if you have worked this out properly yet, so, and therefore if it's suitable for to discuss on the radio, but was this thing that you uncovered recently about, well, actually we would be talking about more of perpetrators here, but about basically these perpetrators being stepped down aspects of the original father. How does that work?
Well, we are digging in deeper here, and this is how it goes. And this has only been uncovered by mother in the last week, because as we know, she went into forgetfulness, and she has just emerged out of the forgetfulness, and so bits of truth are remembered at a time. So what was remembered by mother in this last week is as follows. The father created three aspects of himself. The father's task was to hold the big picture, to hold the screen open, so mother could go into the screen and get her creations refined in a way that she could bring them out of the screen and out of the next screen and so on and make them more real. Mother was suffering. That journey is fully described in The Gift of the Unicorns. Mother was suffering, and she asked father to hold space so he could not personally enter in to assist her because, you know, he was holding the screen open. And so what happened is that he made three aspects of himself, and he wanted them to go into the screen and to assist the mother. Instead, there was an arch villain that mother didn't know about until but a few months ago. And the arch villain was, and I should say villains because there were two categories, were aspects of herself that she had made. The aspects of herself that she had made came in two forms. Number one, those that were formed aspects, and it is, as I've mentioned before, the equivalent of someone standing between two mirrors, and the images are receding linearly forward and backwards behind them. That is what Mother did to open up space in the mirror. And in that space in the mirror, we can think of that as the television screen, she created us. And so those aspects were very hostile to Mother. But there were unformed aspects of Mother, and how she used these is, if you can think of a pearls that are on a string. Usually they make knots between the pearls so the pearls don't brush each other's beautiful mother of pearl off the surface. They're kept a little bit apart. If you think of the pearl as clusters of cosmoses, and in between those clusters of cosmoses, there's the string that has a knot in it. That was unformed layers of oceans of consciousness, different than mind at rest. Mind at rest is the membrane of the cosmos. It's not aware. These are aware. They were created and became very hostile to the real Mother. The aspects and the oceans had agreed to remind her of things during the journey if she were to go by choice into this forgetfulness, to go into a smaller and smaller screen, to refine the details, to bring us out of it. The oceans of consciousness collaborated with those three aspects that the Father had with good intention made. And they produced multiple beings as like a counterfeit creation. And they produced some of the major villains like Thoth. Mother did not create Thoth. Those gods and goddesses that are the arch-villains that we can read about in that history, and it's also mentioned in greater illuminating detail by Isis in Opening the Doors of Heaven, they weren't made by Mother. But the strange thing of it is, my brothers and sisters, we have lost so many beings, and I was so sad about that. And a while ago, I was really just completely sad. I said, Mother, why has the cost been so great? We've lost all these beings. And she didn't answer me, but Father did. And he said that we're never meant to live. I then could not understand that Mother would do something so cruel as to, and I knew there was an answer, but on the surface, the Mother would do something that create creation that was never meant to survive because they weren't given the proper equipment, the proper wherewithal. And of course, what seems at face value to be rather chaotic came out to be perfection in that Mother never did create them. Much of creation, much of these horrible atrocities that people have committed through the ages came from beings that were not made by Mother. They were made by one of Father's lower aspects and the oceans of consciousness. And they never were meant to live.
And so, for example, Lucifer would be one of these, well, lower aspects as well.
Yes and no. Lucifer's higher aspects was made in that way, yes. Mother took a lower aspect, which we call Lucifer, and put him into the underworld with hosts to embody the chaos. So she's the one that did not make Lucifer, but she made Lucifer the demon of the underworld. Mother did this according to the Darklings to embody the chaos because it was getting out of hand on the planet, and the planet herself was suffering horribly. And she could have had a major earth tilt. So Mother embodied the chaos, put it into the demons. The light amongst humankind immediately rose. And the light, as it rose, rose for two reasons. A, that the chaos was now no longer in their midst. But secondly, because now they identified with what they were not. It was, oh, there's Lucifer, you know. We're not that. Okay, so we're light. So they started to define themselves better. And so they started to live better. So that was the positive results of creating an underworld. Mother created Lucifer as the demon of the underworld, but the actual being, no, she did not create.
But then the irony would be that the actual being then ultimately kind of stems from the father as well.
That is the ultimate irony, yes. But you see, the thing is through here, what was not understood at the beginning is that male creation is so totally incomplete that it creates a lowering of consciousness. So the father tried to help. It actually, by creating his own aspects, the whole dissension process went deeper.
Okay, and but at the same time, when we speak about these aspects, and in the mother's case as well, basically turning against them, so her
yes.
aspects turning against her.
Yes, not dissimilar.
Wow. So, I don't know what this is.
Okay, well, you know, let's just go a step further with this. Because the fact that father helped to create something that he didn't create jointly with mother, because of what happened, we went into a deeper and deeper and deeper dissension. What is the possible benefit of that? It caused humongous pain and anguish. So what is the benefit of that? My brothers and sisters, it is the benefit of that is the knowledge that was gained at a very minuscule level. Think of it as the tapestry, and we've given this illustration before, but I'm going to take this a step further. Think of it as a tapestry with a beautiful weaving, very, very nice picture. Mother needs to understand the threads of the tapestry, how that tapestry has been made. So she thinks, I will go into descension, because descension requires the separating of the threads. I will go into descension, and then I will understand how this weaving actually takes place, the vertical threads, the horizontal threads, how they fit together, how the colors vary. But I can't understand it by looking only at the big picture, at the whole picture. So she decides to go in and separate the threads. But now, various events push it even further, and now she goes into a deeper dissension with the cosmos than previously anticipated. And all of life is clear on that. All beings that I've spoken to have said that we went far deeper than any of us realized we would go. What is the benefit of that? Well, now the actual threads are separated out into the very fibers from which those threads exist. Because separation happened to an even more minuscule level. The more this detail that you're looking at, the more you forget the big picture. You have to, otherwise you can't focus on the threads. That is why Mother assumed the forgetfulness. So what it enabled Mother to do has been very obvious to me during the first months in 2008. Mother was able to examine the very building blocks, the quantum physics level building blocks from which life was made. She made many, many changes in it. We've spoken on that. It should be on the archives of the shows. But the point is, she was able to go in further than she ever thought possible and went into the very building blocks, the very tiny fibers, and was able to modify life from there and so improve the big picture, which is the tapestry. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content that is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with The Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back with us. And we were able to explore some fun topics this morning: why such a descension was necessary, what was the benefits of it going quite as deeply as it did, and the ever-popular topic of Nibiru, made popular by Zachariah Sitchin's work, and some other topics of the planetary systems and the archetypal importance of man. So if you are just tuning in, make sure that you catch us on the archives. And Rogier, what else would you like to talk about?
Well, because an alarm went off in the office here, I wasn't quite sure what exactly you covered in the last bit, but I did have the question still of why, how it is that aspects of the being turns against itself, because I remember in another show we discussed this idea of hierarchy and how the hand doesn't say to the head, you know, you're not important, or vice versa, and yet here it would seem that parts of the infinite being are actually at war with, like, its other parts.
Well, no, that's that we need to set some of that straight. The hand and the foot and the head assumes that they're the same. There is a vast difference between a being standing between two mirrors and the reflections in the mirror. The reflections in the mirror are not real, and the being is. So it's not part of one being at war with itself. So good thing that you brought that up so we can get that clear, because that's not the case. The mirror, the only difference between the being in the mirror analogy and the actual one of us doing the same thing is that the beings in the mirror were given freedom of choice to some extent, and they were made contracts with, when I get to this level, you remind me of this, and so on, which they didn't do. So, you know, they were given freedom of choice, but that doesn't make them any more real than we were when this whole thing began. Mother has made us more real and more real and more real, layer upon layer. And it is for her infinite love that she subjected herself to the density so she could understand it, so she could fix it, so she could bring us out of it. But so that's the first thing. How could they turn against mother? You know, how could beings turn against father? That is what happens when there is not enough balance between masculine and feminine. When mother primarily made her aspects and her, shall we say, the oceans of consciousness, they were reflections of her feminine only. When there is not enough masculine in a being, they become subversively hostile and they become destructive. And this is a fascinating little topic, if I can just be allowed to run with us here for a moment, Rogier, because until recently, there was substantially more feminine within the cosmos than there was masculine. I always assumed, in fact, I said it on this station, that the reason there's more feminine is because of the creative properties, the birthing properties that the infinite mother has. So we call her a mother versus a father, though she contains all masculine and all feminine, but there's more feminine than masculine. it turns out that that is not the way it was supposed to be at all, that that is the result of an imbalance that occurred within the cosmos, that the imbalance occurred in part because of the fact that Mother gave specific assigned tasks to these feminine aspects that held over open layers of space before space collapsed in October 2007. She gave them very physical tasks, very active tasks. They totally overpolarized, as did the oceans of consciousness, into inactivity, into the feminine. So the majority of existence in the hidden realms were overpolarizing into inactivity. In addition to that, what also tipped the scale is that they created with these villains, as we earlier spoke about, multiple creations. In fact, at least as many as Mother created for the original template of perfection. So they created that many. They themselves were reflections of Mother's feminine, because originally she made Father as a reflection of her masculine, which she later corrected. She made him a reflection of all of her. But she had created them as reflections of feminine. So now they create 52% of the cosmos's creatures with not enough masculine components within them to even pass on to these bogus creations. So we end up with this vast overpolarization into the feminine in the cosmos, pushing the only proactive point left, which is the Earth, where Mother has been, and humanity into overactivity. That's why life has seemed so over control, out of control, because we have been pushed into so much activity that it's been so tiring, because it's to balance the overpolarization into the feminine of the rest. Mother has fixed this. She has made 50% masculine and 50% feminine in the cosmos and within herself. This is going to affect humankind as the microcosm of the macrocosm profoundly. We should have far more inclination and ability and desire to be in states of beingness, not just the doingness that people are so involved in. It also has brought back balance. But now, if we go back to my previous statement, where I said that if there is not enough masculine, it doesn't build, but it destructures to the point of destructiveness. That's why there has been such destructiveness in the cosmos, because there wasn't enough masculinity. My brothers and sisters, we actually have another commercial break coming up. It seems that this segment passed very rapidly.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
The
world of mysticism as yet another reason to rejoice, Almeen has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
Welcome back to our last segment of our show today. Ruchir, what would you like to cover during our last segment?
Well, I have a kind of a bundle of few points. In the beginning of the show, you were referring to, well, you had this kind of disclaimer about talking about Nibiru, etc., and regarding it as allegorical fiction. And let's see, I know we, for example, had some letters about someone who really wanted to know about their heritage in the system of Lyra, etc. And when I read that, I kind of just had to think as well of what you've said about Atlantis and Lemuria, which may not, in fact, be very popular to say, but that you, in fact, also said that that's kind of like this allegorical fiction in the sense that it technically didn't really happen anymore.
Correct, yes.
So would you explain that?
Well, Atlantis, according to what Mother said, was founded by those who came in from Nibiru. In fact, in the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, it says that the city rose in a single afternoon by the power of Itolan. What we understand by the history keepers and also from the Isis manuscript is that, in fact, the power of Itolan was nothing more or less than the cosmic life force center. And Thoth traded a secret about Isis's immortality to the kings of Antares. It was in the Antares life system that the life force center of the cosmos resided. They were selling it off piece by piece by piece to planets. And Thoth traded them the secret of Isis being an immortal being, and that if they drained her energy, that they could in fact become immortal as well. They did this, and she speaks about it in the Isis records. However, in exchange, they gave him a piece of the cosmic life force center. Talk about plundering the environment. Every time a piece of the life force center was pillaged by somebody, the cosmos had less life force and less consciousness. But the kings of Antares became enriched. The Antares system is what founded Lemurian society. It is from the Atlantean, from Nibiru that the Atlantean society was founded. So when Mother erased not only the stars in Antares, as well as Nibiru, as well as the two points in the temples of humankind, she also erased the history as something worth keeping of Atlantis and of Lemuria. Because if they were no longer, neither was the history. So, you know, people still explore it. They still remember being there. That might be. It's like people remembering walking down a street in New Orleans that got washed away and is now rebuilt and it's something else at this point. It doesn't mean you didn't walk in that street. But as, what does it mean when Mother removes it as a reality? My brothers and sisters, Mother carries the insights of that which is from the past in her amygdala, in the back, bottom end of a part of the skull. And she does this because, obviously, that was not done for nothing. The grand insights of it is shaping the present. So we gained a lot of knowledge we don't want to forfeit. What she does not need is that which was discordant. If she keeps it in her amygdala, it makes a discordant tone, and it pulls mother out of the place of innocence. So she doesn't keep it there. She dumped all knowledge to do with what isn't. She kept only the insights of what is. The great thing of it is that if, so technically, just to finish this point, technically, if it is not kept as history in the amygdala of mother, it technically means that it didn't happen. That does not mean that if you had horrific child abuse when you were a child, that you don't still remember it. But it does mean that because it is something that does not reflect the purity of the infinite being, that it is erased as a reality. My brothers and sisters, it means that it's a lot easier for us to overcome things that happened to us in our, quote, past, much, much easier just to walk away from it. Erase it like with an eraser in your mind as though it didn't happen. The years of processing all of it, it doesn't need to be done that way anymore. Mother has dumped it the way you would dump a computer's information. And so its real part, the sting of it, is removed. It's easier to overcome those things, even if we, in our memory, still experienced it. So I was going to say something, and I interrupted myself because I wanted to finish my point. Was there anything you needed to ask about that?
The only question I had about that was really a more just sort of devil's advocate question, because I actually know that it's correct what you say, but I mean, would it really be so easy just to say that we can erase that now, and that even though we still have it in our memory, it's now didn't really happen?
Well, the absolute hallmark of mastery is fluidity. Because as a master, if you move all the way to the tippy top of that pyramid of illumination, and of course it never ends, it just keeps going, your reality changes moment by moment by moment. I have been in a situation where everybody around me has assembled a whole new reality. None of them know it. I saw it. I saw what was, and I see what is. Because it's reassembling moment by moment into newness. But if your belief systems hold the old, then you don't transition like you should, and it's like an echo that lags behind. So Mother is saying that there's something she wishes to say. Just a second, please. Ishkiachma kuyevete, ishba kena vahasta. Eshmihkia pa kene ehehye, kavakia ba ushu tuyivinese. Sikviakia, eshvihkia ma ushu. Asvaki mehkie unu uchu kuyevye, tabaska tava, nishpa kunu huviset. Mother is saying that our amygdalas also are having all that was not dumped. So at this point, it really isn't even in our memories. If the left brain is still prevalent, then it tends to hold on to what it thinks the memory should be. If we live in that place of the silence of the mind, and since it is no longer in our amygdala either, there is no memory of it, nor has it happened. So I guess what Mother is saying is that the left brain is the culprit that hangs on to things only when we are still governed by surface mind.
All right. Sounds good.
And we have just about 2 minutes left. Do you have a quick question, or shall I just run with something?
I think you better run with something.
And the something is, my brothers and sisters, this is an entirely unrelated topic, but it is the issue of perception seekers versus power seekers. And we have in one of our previous shows said that the power seekers mostly occur in that middle of the pyramid. And it's the level where teachers are able to go back and forth between the realms, and then they start to either become power seekers or they have the absolute discipline to shun that and keep seeking perception, and that then takes them up to the top of the pyramid. Power seekers are very much into the unknown. Excuse me. Very much into the unknown. Whereas perception seekers aim for the unknowable. I have been recording for 4 hours and my throat is starting to get a little dry. My brothers and sisters, do not judge anybody around you by what they do. Judge them by the response of your heart that you have to them. And as you grow in glory, shun the path that for the sake of show does the miracles. When you yourself are a master at that capstone, others around you will do the miracles and you will just facilitate it. I want to end on this note, and the biggest shield a master can have is his or her humility, knowing that from our vantage point, we can know nothing of the vast majority of life. May we travel our journey in humility is my prayer. Until next time.
The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Al Mean. Please join us again next week.